Greetings, everyone. Welcome to Project Rostrum. This is Brian Krieger in the pilot episode of the podcast, where a few plebes who formerly served in the military will try to unpack this week's major events in the news and give some reactions. Today, I'm joined by my friends Stephen Shepard and Andrew Judge, Army and Navy veterans, respectively, to discuss the controversial verdict in the Bobergdahl trial, some November elections results from this past Tuesday, and the Washington Post story concerning Roy Moore. We'll start off with a little bit of introduction. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, Andrew?
Sure. My name is Andrew Judge, former Navy SEAL for 10 years. I was medically retired with mental health issues and drug addiction, and then I'm currently kind of overcoming it right now, so I'm right on a bubble. Me in a nutshell.
All right. How about you, Stephen? You want to tell us a little about yourself?
My name is Stephen Shepard. I was born and raised in South Carolina. I've lived here pretty much my whole life. Former Army Infantry. I was in from 2006 to 2009. It's been about 15 months in Baghdad, so I've seen some combat. I'm just here living the dream, and I'm a little concerned about the direction my government's going at the moment. So here we are.
All right. So we'll move on to the first topic. The Friday before last, the verdict on the Bobergdahl trial was released, and many veterans I know personally showed some dismay in various social media outlets over the outcome. Bergdahl walked off his post in 2009 and then spent 5 years as an enemy captive. He pled guilty to desertion and was sentenced to time already served as a POW and given a dishonorable discharge, reduced in rank to private, and required to forfeit $1,000 pay for 10 months. I'm assuming that this will be his back pay for when he was in prison. He will avoid prison time, and there's been a strong negative reaction from the public and the veteran community to this verdict. Today we'll try to unpack the nuance of this trial and what may have led the judge to make this decision. So, according to the New York Times story from November 3rd, 2017, there were concerns about Bergdahl's mental health that were unaddressed at the time leading up to his desertion. It is speculated that if these concerns were properly addressed, the entire situation likely could have been prevented. According to an ABC News story from November 1st, 2017, a forensic psychiatrist who interviewed Bergdahl and his family, in addition to Bergdahl himself, asserted that he suffered from schizotypal personality disorder. And though he did not have a problem distinguishing right from wrong, the disorder is likely to have played a major part in the desertion of his post. Without jumping into the details of the specific desertion, I would like to note that the military experiences 5,000 desertions per year on a pretty regular basis, but prosecutes only about 5% of these cases. This has been a pretty consistent trend since 2003. Does anyone here think that there's a bit of a stigma when it comes to mental health disorders in the military? You know, do you think people kind of try to hide their problems?
I mean, I think in the military, you know, you're playing a role. From my experience, you know, I'm playing the role of like a warrior, and that's, you know, I have a certain ideals and mindset. And how do I explain this? You're playing a role. So any mental health issues is looked as a weakness, and you don't want to be looked as weak.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of just from my perspective.
And I completely agree with that. I mean, especially, you know, being infantry, you know, we're supposed to be the grunts, we're the tough ones. So, and that's what Bergdahl was, infantry. So, I mean, I know where if he was fighting any demons that he didn't want to let out, I can understand where he's coming from, because, you know, you got to be tough. You got to be there for your brothers. You don't want to let anybody down. And it might not necessarily be that they're the reason for the stigma. The help is always there. It's just that you don't want to come forward and say it because you don't. I don't know. I guess the pride thing is a man thing.
Like it's a pride thing, and we have a job to do. You know.
Yeah.
It definitely, you are offered the ability to be seen about this sort of thing, but I think it definitely carries the sort of stigma that if you're a person who's going to get mentally checked out, and then something's probably wrong with you, and it encourages people to avoid dealing with their problems because they think that it can jeopardize their job or jeopardize their position or perhaps jeopardize their fellow service members by giving up.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a big responsibility.
Well, you kind of feel, I would imagine, it would kind of be like, you almost feel like you're leaving your post anyways if you go and ask for help, because you are. You're kind of abandoning the people that you've trained with and that you've learned to fight with. You know, they've learned to have you there as part of their team, and you don't want to give up on that. you don't want to not be there for them.
Exactly.
That'd be a tough position to be in. Like, I don't, from what Bert Dahl, he realized that he just didn't want to be a part of that anymore. Like, I never really felt that. Like, I did want to be a part of what I didn't realize till years later that I probably might not should have felt that way. But at the time, I was all gung-ho. Like, I was all for it. Like, if they sent us into combat, that's what we wanted to do. That was fun. I can't truly sympathize, but as an infantryman, I do know that you want to be there for your brother. That's important. That's very important. That's part of having that blue cord on your shoulder.
So do you think removing the stigma culturally, getting people help, would that somehow sort of prevent this sort of behavior? Or do you think it would help people deal with it? We'd have better readiness if there was less of a stigma around it? Or what could the military do to help people dealing with this kind of thing, you think?
Honestly, I think we're doing it pretty well right now. You know, I mean, if you're having mental health issues, then, you know, yes, you should let go because your perspective's changing and you're growing or evolving. So, you know, it's at that point the individual needs to either on their own realize, okay, hey, I want to better myself, you know, and overcome this in order to help others.
Yeah. So you think that they are taking the lessons that have been learned from past experience and sort of applying them slowly and doing a better job of helping people deal with this?
No, it's not that any mental health problems are new to soldiers. It's that the treatment and the recognition of a lot of them, especially PTSD, you know, it's not a new thing, just the recognition of it's new. So it's probably going to take a little time. They'll get there. They're working on it. Things are getting better.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, people are starting to get more of the treatment they need. They're getting there.
Absolutely. And I think the big things that, for me, that have helped me throughout, you know, my time out of the military, it's been, you know, the people around me. It's been the communities that I've, you know, the places that I've visited, the people that do care about vets and they do care about us. And, you know, it's just communities, you know, of just empathetic people and really what is healing us or healing me.
All right. Yeah. I've read a good bit of media and stuff since I got out about how they're dealing with stuff. And I think there is a recognition that there is a problem in the military when it comes to mental health that they need to better address in order to just facilitate readiness. Because if you kick everyone out who has some sort of traumatic experience, the first time somebody sees combat, you know, you're going to be eliminating them from the military, more or less.
And I mean, everybody has different levels of traumatic experience, and some people are more sensitive to others, you know, and it's wants to serve, you know, I think they should want to serve, you know, but if, I don't know, that's kind of, I guess, the next topic. I feel they can still help in other ways.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah. Like, I didn't do anything related to war fighting. So I feel perfectly fine about my service. But go ahead, Steven.
Well, what you were saying a second ago about, you know, somebody would complain about having problems, or, you know, say they're having issues and they get kicked out right away. Like, if you can't have that, because if you make people think that that's going to happen to them, then you're going to have people not saying anything when they should, not seeking help when they really should. And it's going to, you know, that's not a good thing. You don't need somebody breaking down in the middle of combat, in the middle of a firefight or something. You gotta let the people know that the help is there. That's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Many have referred to Bergdahl as a traitor, including the President of the United States. The Constitution defines treason in Article 3, Section 3 as follows. Treason against the United States shall consist only of levying war against them, or adhering to enemies and giving them aid and comfort. And also in the Code of Laws of the United States, whoever, owing allegiance to the United States, levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid or comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and fined under this title not less than $10,000, and shall be incapable of holding office under the United States. This sort of gets into the Bergdahl committed desertion, and a lot of people have called him a traitor. And personally, I think you could make a weak argument for treason against Bergdahl, but I don't think it would stand up in a court. Do you guys think there's a substantive difference between treason and desertion?
I would say there definitely is a difference. Desertion is, you know, to leave without intending to return, especially if it's a post or an important duty. That's desertion. Just not wanting to do it anymore, just, you know, say, I don't want to be a part of this anymore, I'm leaving. that's desertion. The treason, as the definition you just read, that's trying to help the enemy do something against the country, which Bergdahl clearly didn't do. He was captured and put in a cage for 5 years. So, I mean, I don't think the term traitor is the right thing to do, or the right word to use.
Yeah, it was also mentioned that his debriefing was a gold mine of intelligence, which I don't think a traitor would give to the United States.
Exactly.
A debriefing.
Yeah.
So
I think he not only didn't help the enemy, he helped us perform some operations, some successful.
But certainly the desertion is bad, obviously. I don't want to downplay that. I just want to clarify the difference between being a traitor and being a deserter. They are different things. Even if you are super patriotic and think they're the same, the law does not. Do you have an opinion on this, Andrew?
I agree completely with the both of you. You know, there is a difference, and I think, you know, people just need to be aware of the difference and the meanings of, you know, words that they're saying.
Yeah, for certain. This leads us into the next part of the topic, which Bergdahl pled guilty to desertion and misbehavior before the enemy, but his sentencing was marred by accusations of unlawful command influence on the part of the current sitting president. During his campaign, then-candidate Donald Trump would often refer to Bergdahl in his speeches, calling him a dirty, rotten traitor, and calling for his execution. After assuming office, Trump was asked during the Bergdahl case in October and reiterated his campaign rhetoric. The judge in the Bergdahl trial agreed with the defense counsel that the statements did constitute unlawful command influence and denied the prosecution's motion to dismiss the charge. So do you think it's reasonable for a judge to take a president's comments? Because he made a sort of roundabout comment. I can't talk about the Bergdahl case, but I'm going to agree with what I said before. Essentially talking about the Bergdahl, he tried to like circumvent it. During the campaign, obviously Trump was very fiery in his rhetoric, and he didn't say anything until he was asked by a reporter in October what he thought about the Bo Bergdahl trial. And then he sort of reaffirmed his position that he had made on the campaign trail. The counsel for the defense had made a motion for unlawful command influence, and the judge kind of dismissed it because there had been no statement since he had assumed the office of the president. After he assumed the office of the president, he got baited by the reporter in October into sort of reaffirming his statements that he had made previously, and the judge ruled that that basically constituted unlawful command influence, and then had to enter it into evidence and take it into account. So do you think it's incumbent upon the person who's leading the military to sort of exercise some sort of discipline when it comes to these things?
Well, most certainly. I mean, everybody that hears the president speak, listen, especially when you're military, I mean, he's the commander in chief. It's not like he came down and says, here, this is what you do with this particular person in this case. You can't just have that happening. I mean, you just can't. You can't have the person that has the most influence over people making rash comments like that, just on a whim, just as he pleases.
Well, yeah, it definitely falls under separation of powers, because the judiciary is supposed to be considered separate from the executive branch, and this is definitely him trying to influence the outcome by like, it's fine if you're on a campaign and you're running about how you feel about something, but then once you're in an office, you have a responsibility. And there's even precedent for this. There was two rape cases that were tried during Obama's term, and he had the same sort of situation happen to him, where he was asked by a reporter what he thought of this, and he basically said that they should be reduced in rank and thrown out of the military. This was considered unlawful command influence, and the judge took it into account and actually threw out the case, despite evidence, because of the unlawful command influence. So it's not something that's just limited to Trump. It's not that this judge is trying to spite Trump specifically. Do you have any opinion on this, Andrew?
I mean, like, I think it's, you know, for our commander-in-chief or our president, or, you know, I think it's level of professionalism into, I don't know, say things like that. It's just kind of embarrassing, you know?
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, you just need to hold a certain level of professionalism and answer your question.
Yeah.
On the campaign trail, he suggested dropping from an airplane with no parachute, right? one of the things he said.
This is not even an acceptable form of execution in the United States.
I mean, no, that's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's even talking about execution is just kind of, I don't know.
It's kind of gross.
It's far from
that. Yeah, it is. Far from that, you know?
Yeah.
Ask that.
I guess one thing to address is maybe some people might feel that if the president has kept his mouth shut, maybe he wouldn't have influenced the outcome of the trial. Some people feel that the judge was sort of going against the commander-in-chief and kind of using this to spite him. So do you think, from what you know of this case, either of you guys can answer this, do you think he would have gotten a harsher sentence if this was not even taken into account in the first place?
I don't think so. No.
Edit this out.
No, it's fine.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I mean, no, I don't think so. You know, I think the judge did everything right, and the people did everything right as well. So, I mean,
yeah, I mean, I have to
kind of worked
when
out.
I first read the trial outcome, I thought that this might have been the case. I thought that maybe the influence, maybe the judge was doing this, maybe not. But as I kind of got deeper into the story, I realized that this would have probably been the outcome of the situation anyway. Because I think people kind of downplay the fact that he was in custody of the Taliban for 5 years. He was in a cage for many of those years, like literally in a cage welded together. And that's way harsher than any sort of prison sentence that anyone would go through. Yeah.
Well, and let's not forget the intel he gathered. I mean, you know, he did gather valuable intel. I don't remember how many successful operations, but that was at least useful.
Yeah, and obviously desertion.
You definitely don't do that.
You know, it's like through enough shit, and guess what? He's got an even longer road now to process everything that he's gone through. So I think that's I don't want to even call it a form of punishment, but it's something that he has to figure out in his life.
Yeah.
So and by executing him or doing something like throwing him back in jail, like it's not, we're not learning from it. We're not solving anything, you know, we're snuffing it away.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I didn't think that he should be executed at any point. I just thought that maybe he would have spent some time in jail when I first started reading the story if the president had not made the statements. But upon sort of getting into the details, I think the judge just made the ruling that he made, and it was the correct ruling regardless of what happened. But he was right to mention the sort of undisciplined speech that was coming from the president. So Tuesday's elections brought a lot of success to the Democratic candidates across the nation. Ralph Northam won a landslide election, 54-45, in the governor's race against Ed Gillespie. Philip Murthy also won a governor's race in New Jersey against Kim Guadagno. Democrats managed to narrowly win back a heavily gerrymandered Virginia House of Delegates in Virginia, with the seats at 48 for the Democrats and 47 for the Republicans. There was a lot of diversity in these wins, including the first transgender candidate to win a state house. And it was kind of a karmic justice. Danica Rome, who was the transgender candidate, defeated the author of Virginia's controversial bathroom bill, HB 1612, Bob Marshall. So this was sort of people are calling it a wave election. There was a lot of momentum from the liberal side of our politics, and it seems like it was a bit of a rebuke to the sort of policy direction that the country is going. And if it holds, they may end up taking back the House in 2018, is what a lot of people are speculating. Anybody?
We can hope.
Notably, Utah was able to hold on to its GOP seat, which kind of seems to be making people nervous about the Senate election that's coming up between Roy Moore and Doug Jones in Alabama. This is for a Senate seat, which is obviously a lot more
controversial.
No, it matters more. Like a federal seat matters more than a state seat to the country at large. So this, I think, has a lot of people nervous, especially in light of the news that has come out about Roy Moore. Now, before we get into the news, it's not like Roy Moore was not a controversial figure before. This is a guy who, during his primaries against the sitting senator who was appointed to the seat after Jeff Sessions left to take up the Department of Justice, during the campaign, the guy pulls out a pistol in the middle of his like campaign speech while he's up there at a rally. I mean, it's Alabama. Wacky things are going to happen, I guess. This is also the same judge that tried to put the Ten Commandments in front of his courthouse. That was also very controversial when that happened. And then now that he's in the national spotlight, potentially with a strong possibility of winning a Senate seat, the Washington Post released a story about some questionable behavior that he conducted between 1977 and 84. It seems that as a 34-year-old assistant district attorney, he had a penchant for dating high school girls. And in many cases, they were very underage. In some reports, the main one, she was 14 when she was when she encountered Roy Moore. And there's a second and third account from a 16 and a 17-year-old that's backed up by some 30 witnesses. And many other stories have been written since then, basically backing this story up. And there's been a very loud vocal rebuke from right-wing media calling it a smear, calling it partisan journalism and whatnot. And I guess, what do you guys think about this sort of in the broad strokes? Anybody want to jump in on this one?
Well, I think it's up to Alabama voters to decide if they want to set a precedent that this behavior is acceptable. Let's just hope that they don't.
As a professional, you know, makes mistakes, but that's, I don't know, that's just kind of, it's not right, you know, and I think, I don't know if he would be the best choice.
With that sort of background or that kind of...
Yeah, I mean, if it's true and he admits to it, or if he doesn't admit to it, or, you know, it's kind of...
Senate position.
It's a kind of a difficult...
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I personally think that if you're going to be elected to the Senate, you're held to a higher standard than the average citizen. I think the same is true of a military veteran. If you're going to serve in the military, you're held to a higher standard than the average citizen. And public service carries the same sort of weight, even more so for some positions. If you don't hold the president to a higher standard than the average citizen, what is the point of the office?
I agree with that, you know. I just need more information. I need more information on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to add. I think I got it.
Well, a lot of people seem to be saying everyone is innocent until proven guilty. And these are allegations at this point. And I would tend to agree with that. I think Mitt Romney made a good point. Like, innocent until proven guilty is for criminal convictions, not elections, he said in a tweet, which I think is true.
Yeah.
He may be innocent of this.
I can agree with that.
But just the swirl of rumor around this kind of disqualifies him, in my opinion. Because, like, you have to have faith in your public servants. You have to have faith in the fact that they're good people. And this guy has sort of broken the trust. The stuff that he did, if you read the Washington Post report, he was basically exploiting his position of power. He was a district attorney. He picked up one of these girls outside of the courthouse, offered the mom, who was in a hearing, a custody hearing, to watch her child while she went into the hearing, saying things like, oh, you don't want her to go in and deal with that, so he could sort of do his predatory behavior. And a lot of people seem to have this idea that people do this to sort of get their own shine, get their own moment in the spotlight. And I don't think it's reasonable to think that a person would go through this kind of public exposure for the sake of fame. It just doesn't seem like a reasonable argument to me.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to come with something. It's sometimes important they do, because, you know, people need to know, but nobody wants to do that. I mean, it's not, it can't be a good feeling to say, hey, this happened to me when I was 14. You know, nobody wants to be in the spotlight for that.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it's unreasonable to hold elected officials to sort of higher standards than we do the average person? Like, the average person obviously should follow the law and not be found guilty of things, and if there is suspicion, then, you know, it should be investigated. If there's something there, they should be tried. But I think if you're in the military, for instance, or if you have some sort of security clearance of public trust, even an allegation like this can cause you problems. And I think the same should be said for public office. Like, do you think it's unreasonable to hold public officials to a higher standard like that?
I agree with what you're saying. You want to play the game, you have to play by the rules. if a guy's going into a certain situation or where he has, like, you know, dirt and shit or things in his past, you know, he needs to kind of come up front and clean with it and move forward. But if he's hiding shit, I mean, it's not going to be better for him.
Yeah.
I think kind of like what you're saying, you know, I agree with what you're saying, you know, he, you know, hopefully a good clean background and, you know, good values. And
that's definitely another aspect of it.
Well, as far as holding to a higher standard, I mean, you kind of have to. You're expecting these people to make decisions that are going to be affecting people's lives. And if that's what they think about people's lives, then, I mean, that's pretty important. You have to be a professional in all aspects of your life if you're going to be in the spotlight like that. I mean, you know, it's 30 years ago. Yes, 30 years ago. But still, like Andrew just said, you know, confront it, face it. Don't just hide it, deny it. And, you know, if it happened to happen, face it. At least like what Louis C.K. is doing here lately. Like, everybody's read that story by now. Like, yeah, he's like, yeah, I did these things and it was wrong. But I mean, if you're just going to pretend it didn't happen, pretend it's a smear campaign and just pretend it's a tactic for the other side, you're not accepting responsibility for what you did. And that's a no-go for somebody in the public office.
Yeah. That seems to be like another thing that people have, this idea that people dig up dirt on people and they sit on it and wait for opportune times to dig it up. But I don't think that's necessarily how things work. I think as a person rises in prominence and becomes more of a national figure, they're going to be more heavily scrutinized. If Roy Moore was not running for Senate, if he was running for a local post in Alabama, maybe people wouldn't be digging 30 years in his past. But because a senator has... they can likely run to even higher office as president of the United States. Now your whole life is under the microscope. And I don't think it's unreasonable to put a person's entire life under the microscope when they're running for a high office like this. So I think that's kind of a ridiculous argument to make, that people would dig up this kind of stuff or just use it as a partisan smear. Like, why are you digging into this man's past? Maybe we should be asking, why does this man seem unapologetic about his past? All right, so I guess to wrap up the show, we're going to do, I don't really know what to call this segment yet. I'm sure we'll come up with a name for it, but I'm going to turn over the floor to the co-host, talk about whatever topics they want. Who wants to go first?
I'll go ahead and go. Something that's always been near and dear to the heart is space, even though it's not the farthest thing from the heart it could be. here recently, Juno has been making several flybys with Juno. I think this most recent one was the 8th one, and the images from it are just stunning. They're just beautiful. I don't know how much people actually pay attention to these things, because, you know, NASA puts them out every so often. Since Juno has been going, there have, you know, just been the most stunning images that we've ever been able to capture of this. And it's coming within 25,000 planet. It's made, like I said, 8 passes so far. And if you want to get on there and Google it, it's well worth it. NASA, the website themselves, or Daily Mail's got a good article, got several good pictures. And yeah. I think it's worth anyone's time to get out there and just look, just to see what we've got floating around our solar system. Also got a few pictures of a couple of Jupiter's moons, Europa, and I'm not seeing the other ones, not from edit that part out.
Yeah, good. I like looking at stuff like this. I used to have
Europa is one of the places that scientists are really looking at for a possible place for microbial alien life, because it's got an ocean that is under a big layer of ice, and we know it's an ocean.
Yeah.
The tidal forces of the traveling planet is constantly making the planet flex, and it keeps it warm. So it's cold, but it's still liquid water. That's one of the main things that scientists are looking for, because, as we know, pretty much all life has to have water.
Yeah, there was, I think, I watched a TED Talk where James Cameron was talking about doing an exploratory mission to Europa to try to drill down and look in the ocean. He's the same.
Oh, that'd be so awesome.
Like, he actually did he planned an expedition to the Titanic, which I think is how he ended up filming that movie or whatever. So it doesn't surprise me. He's an interesting guy. And yeah, I love looking at pictures like stuff like this. Like, I like seeing the Hubble pictures and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think James Webb is going to go up soon as well.
James Webb coming out next year.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to that. I can't wait.
So what do you got for us, Andrew?
Hey, guys. Brian and Steve, yeah, thanks for having me on. And yeah, I mean, things that are kind of that I'm passionate about. I'm currently going to school for music production. Yeah, when I got out of the military, I just kind of had a curiosity for music and realized, you know, how healing it is. And yeah, man, so that's kind of the direction that I'm going. I'm living in Los Angeles right now, attending the Los Angeles Film School for their music production course. So yeah, I mean, hopefully later on down the road, I'll be able to make something really special and hopefully connect with a lot of people and help them heal. Yeah, I mean, to like all the veterans out there, you know, especially the ones that are suffering from issues, just to remind you guys, you know, just keep fighting, you know, and don't ever give up. And if you need, you know, you got to figure out what you got to figure out, you know, it's your time to heal. Don't give up. Seek, you know, friends and family out and community, because within my life, that has helped me tremendously in just kind of the healing process, you know, and just remember that mental health, you know, whatever you get out on, you know, if it's PTSD or depression, like it's your experience, you know, but it's not like who you are, you know. In your military service, though, you might have played a role in the military and now you're out of the military, like don't be afraid, like you don't have to play that role anymore, you know. You can be yourself and explore that, you know. So
it doesn't have to define man. You if you don't want it to. But yeah, that's definitely something I should probably listen to music more. I've kind of like lost touch with music over the years. I feel like I don't listen to it much anymore. I used to be super into it when I was in my early 20s.
We're all connected, man. We're all connected, and music is it's another form of communication and a way we process things and feelings. And don't be afraid to fear the unknown.
Yeah.
Scary, and life might be fucking, it's not all smooth sailing, but you know what? Like, sometimes you need to go through these stressful situations, and you know, when you come out through the other side, you're a new person, you're reborn, and you're to do whatever, free to think whatever way you want to think. And you know, that's, I think, how the future, how we're gonna, you know, change a lot of things and do a lot of good. We live to our country, to the world, you know.
Yeah,
it's these issues that we're talking about now, and
yeah, definitely, man.
Veterans in the future are you know, we're going to have a really big say on what really goes on, because we went through a lot of shit. So,
I mean, you're going to school now and everything. And for sure, if you return, if you come do another show with us and you ever want to preview some music on here, I'm totally open to that as well.
Yeah, man, I'd love to. If you guys want to follow me on Instagram,
yeah,
you can follow me on The Sloppy Frog.
All right.
Professional, yeah. Yeah, guys, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate you, Brian. It's great catching up with you. And yeah, Steve, it's really great getting to know you too.
Yeah, definitely, man. Thanks for coming on. I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
All right, I'm going to wrap it up then.